Well, good morning. Thank you all for coming this morning. It's really nice to be on this panel with great colleagues, and it turns out that our presentations are very complementary to each other, so it'll be nice to go through this and have a chance to discuss them all at the end. Let me say as a disclaimer, I don't have any financial conflicts of interest, but this is actually not Howie speaking. This is I'm channeling a committee, because I'm here to tell you about a committee report that's pictured on this slide. It's called Sustainability for the Nation. And this was a National Academy of Sciences committee on which I served, so this is the chance to tell you about that report. Everybody know about the National Academy of Sciences? And just to put this in context, and I want to do this for a reason, partly because everybody should know about the National Academies, but partly because it helps to understand the sustainability discourse in the country. So there are three national academies. The National Academy of Sciences, which was formed in 1863, when there was a lot going on in the country. You might remember the Civil War happened then. And it's a reminder that great things can happen, lasting positive changes can be made even during very stressful times. And we'll circle back to that at the closing. The National Academy of Engineering and the Institute of Medicine. And they have an operating arm called the National Research Council. The National Research Council has a lot of the committees that actually do the work of the national academies. And one of those divisions is called the Policy and Global Affairs Division. So buried within that is something called the Program for Science and Technology for Sustainability. So I tell you all of this not because we love org charts, but to let you know that there is in the National Academies a little place that actually has responsibility for sustainability, science, and technology. And that program has a charter. It's, as you might expect, contribute to sustainable improvements in human well-being, et cetera, et cetera. Human well-being is at the center of that charge. But as I bring this description to this particular meeting, the American Public Health Association, I'm going to make the editorial comment that human well-being is actually hard to find within the sustainability discourse. But the fact that a couple of us from the health side were on this committee, I think, is a very positive development. That committee launched something called the Roundtable on Science and Technology for Sustainability. Roundtables are a particular forum within the national academies. They don't issue reports per se, but they get together on a regular basis and exchange ideas. The Roundtable on Science and Technology for Sustainability includes people with expertise in industrial ecology, in environmental sciences and earth sciences, nobody from the health world at all. So kind of interesting, but not atypical. In much of the climate change and sustainability dialogue nationally, there's a conspicuous shortage of people from the social sciences and the health sciences. However, that roundtable launched a committee called the Committee on Sustainability Linkages in the Federal Government, and that's the committee whose report I'm going to be sharing with you today. Here's the committee roster. And unusually for these sustainability committees, there were two health professionals on it. I had the honor of serving, and Lauren Zeiss from Cal EPA, who's an epidemiologist by training, also served. So we had a more conspicuous health presence than you might ordinarily find on these committees. We had a statement of task, which was to provide an analytical framework for decision-making related to linkages of sustainability. And that notion of linkages of sustainability is at the core of this report, so I'll come back to that in just a minute. Identify impediments to interdisciplinary cross-media federal programs, and I won't commit PowerPoint malpractice by reading you the rest of the bullet points on this slide. You can read them yourself. So I want to pause at this point and talk about the concept of sustainability, which is a different concept than health, but they're linked. So many definitions of sustainability out there. Our Common Journey, the original National Academy of Sciences kind of landmark report, referred to conditions in which the people living on Earth over the next half century meet their needs while nurturing and restoring the planet's life support system. So here you've got an attempt to reconcile human needs with ecosystem and resource needs. Dana Meadows is one of the great original thinkers in the sustainability world. Defined a sustainable society as one that can persist over generations, one that is far-seeing enough, flexible enough, and wise enough not to undermine either its physical or its social system of support. This was the definition that we used in this committee report. There is a science that studies sustainability. The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences actually has a sustainability science section in it. And it's nice to be reminded of what sustainability science is all about. It's a science that doesn't involve health very much, but those of us on the health side need to know about it and exploit potential linkages moving forward. It's got a problem-driven quality, that is, it's a very applied science. It's oriented toward decision support, something we can relate to on the public health side. It focuses on dynamic interactions between nature and society. So the diagrams you see tend to be systems diagrams. There are feedback loops. There are dynamic aspects rather than the more linear diagrams that characterize a lot of conventional science research, including in the health sciences. The notion of complex systems is at the center of sustainability science. There is a sense of scales, and you heard David refer to scales a lot in his talk because planners understand this very well, and we in the health sciences are often not geographic thinkers and don't quite think in terms of scales. Human environment systems are the central paradigm in sustainability science, and I won't read you all of the adjectives here, but this is a very, very useful concept, and it's one to which human health outcomes can be very readily mapped. So and the resiliency and vulnerability pieces, which are in the last bullet, are very important. There are some sessions here at the APHA this year focusing on the resilient design and operation of human habitats, such as cities, especially in the post-disaster context. So this is now me talking, not the committee, because I'm going to digress and compare the notions of sustainability and health. Health is defined, a familiar definition from the WHO Constitution, in the IOM's Future of Public Health, which, Dave, you didn't realize, but that's actually the source of the definition you found when you were Googling health online. So those are familiar health definitions for all of us. I've shown you a couple of sustainability definitions already, and here are a couple more. Harvesting or using a resource so that the resource is not depleted or permanently damaged is a dictionary definition. And sustainable development is actually more than sustainability. It has to do with a process of developing an economy. And there's the our common future definition that I think most of us have seen. But there are some pieces missing. It's very interesting to explore and consider the non-overlap of these two domains. So if we drill into the health definition, there's no time dimension to it, as there is in sustainability definitions that typically conceive of long-term aspects of system functioning. There's a limited sense of context. We don't think geographically very much in health. So the state of complete well-being seems disembodied, disconnected from place. And finally, there's no mention of equity. Now, most of us in public health care deeply about equity, but you wouldn't know it from the standard definitions of health or public health. On the other hand, sustainability definitions are missing some elements as well. They typically don't mention health. In fact, in some cases, such as the first definition that you see there, it's hard to see people in them at all. And that leads to the second, the what's in it for me. If you talk to a person on the street and offer a definition of health, the person on the street can relate to that and say, well, boy, I like that. I would like to have health. But if you present a definition of sustainability to the person on the street, he or she is not likely to see himself or herself in that definition. So these are definitions that don't necessarily reach regular folks. And also no mention of equity. So this is missing from both conceptual frameworks. So if we were to create a sustainable health definition, it might involve a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being in conditions in which people can be healthy, including physical, social, economic, and political conditions. So there's the context for health. It's missing from standard health definitions. With equitable access, there's the equity piece, and achieved in ways that don't deplete or permanently damage needed resources so that future generations can also enjoy them. There's the sustainability piece. Now, that definition is so verbose and so wordy that it's never going to be adopted by anybody, but it does give an idea of how sustainability and health can be blended conceptually in ways that they typically aren't. And that was the perspective that the two of us from the health side brought to this sustainability committee. Well, what triggered this committee to be formed and to do its work? It's very hard to govern for sustainability. It turns out that the federal government doesn't do very well at tackling problems of sustainability. And the reasons for that are complex, but they're kind of encapsulated here. Sustainability is a systems challenge. And you saw that a little bit from the ways I described sustainability science. Reality is very complex. Everything is connected to everything, the first law of ecology. Feedback loops operate, and so on. But government isn't built that way. Complex organizations tend to be built in silos. So there was a political science quotation that we used in the report. Political and institutional pressures on public sector agencies in general push for differentiation rather than integration. And the basis for differentiation is typically political rather than technical. So our political institutions don't reflect the reality of how the world works. That's a governance challenge. So put on your political scientist cap and consider the fact that we've got individual agencies. They are formed by separate pieces of legislation. They have different political charges. All of the incentives for people who work in those agencies are to stay within their lanes, color within the lines. Don't do cross-cutting things. And that's, if you think about it, exactly what you would not want a government to do if it were to address sustainability challenges. So the government framework is siloed. The authorizing legislation, there's a Clean Air Act here, there's a Clean Water Act here, there's a transportation bill here, there's a farm bill here, and they're separate legislatively. The authority is dispersed across scales, but you need cross-scale integration to solve systems problems. But if you've got strict separation of federal from state from local jurisdictions, that doesn't help come up with integrated solutions. Funding is highly prescribed. So when I was at CDC, if we wanted to do something together with the Department of Transportation, send some of our money to transportation because they could achieve public health advances, we weren't allowed to do that. Congress said you get these dollars and they get those dollars, and you agencies are not allowed to mix them. Information is rarely integrated. People are quite protective about their databases in many cases. And the culture of government is to be risk-averse and to stay within your lane. So these are structural features of government, not just federal, government at all levels, that make integration and system solutions very difficult. That's why this committee. So the committee identified four areas in which it was going to focus its work, and they're listed here. I want to flag to you that human health and well-being were on the list. Very unusual for these sustainability technical committees across government, and we were very pleased that health actually found a place on the agenda. In fact, the diagram that begins the committee's report puts human well-being at the same. It's kind of a clumsy diagram, but you can see that there is actually serious consideration given to the human dimensions. So this is news. This is news from the sustainability world. Hey, there is increasingly room for considering human health and well-being. We reviewed literature as a committee. We commissioned background papers. We met in various places across the country. And most of the inquiry that we did consisted of six case studies. We picked two coastal case studies, two non-urban systems, and two urban systems. And the fact that these were all place-based case studies is very telling. It turns out that if you think about sustainability as an act of governance, if it's grounded in a place, you get a lot of traction. It's a very helpful way to think about sustainability, more helpful than thinking about, say, disciplines in universities or agencies in government, which are not useful organizing principles. I was going to tell you about a few of the case studies, starting with Philadelphia, but David did such a wonderful job that I'm going to skip through the story of green urban stormwater infrastructure. And thank you, David, for covering that so nicely. Puget Sound and in central Washington state, the Columbia River watershed were both cases that we considered. Puget Sound is a region featuring Seattle, Tacoma, and a number of smaller cities. It's got very rapid commercial and residential development in recent decades, superimposed on about a century of commercial use of the waterways. Very interesting sets of issues there. The trigger issue for a lot of the committee's work was looking at water quality in the Puget Sound. Water quality in Puget Sound has been a challenge because of industrial use. Much of that has been cleaned up. There are still legacy pollutants in a number of the feeder waterways. But water quality hasn't returned to as pristine a state as we would all like, and most of that's because of residential development around the sound with non-point source runoff. So that remains a big challenge, a systems challenge. The Columbia River watershed is a fascinating case study. It's a large watershed. All of the little dots that you see there are dams. This is a watershed that's used for power generation. Most of our power in the Northwest is from hydro. It's used for water retention so that irrigation for agriculture can occur. The entire central part of Washington state is heavily irrigated, agriculturally productive, great wine if you ever want to come out and have some wine with us, and row crops and orchard crops. Fishing is a big issue. These are all salmon rivers, and the salmon have a hard time swimming past dams. There are tribal entitlements to fishing, both in Puget Sound and on the inland waterways. So with both of these cases, there is a complex mixture of phenomena: population growth, land use issues, industrial emissions, agriculture, all interacting with each other in complex ways, and there is a quiz on this diagram at the end. So how do you govern and manage systems like this? Well, Puget Sound has an entity called the Puget Sound Partnership, which is a quasi-governmental entity. The Columbia River Basin has a several decades-old model formed by Congress, the Bonneville Power Administration, and an associated conservation council. The committee found that the Puget Sound situation had not been a highly successful instance of management, mostly because of a disconnect between land use decisions that remain local and federal mandates that conflict with each other and don't integrate with the land use decisions. The Columbia River, on the other hand, arguably has been quite well managed because of some of the governance features of those two entities. It's a unique example of an innovation in federal governance where authority is delegated to a local entity which has extensive stakeholder input and operates on a place-based manner rather than in a siloed agency mission manner. The Platte River system in Nebraska is a very interesting case study as well. I think I'm going to not talk about it in detail because I'm running a little short on time, but I would invite you to take a look at the committee's report. A fairly successful example of ecosystem place-based management that integrates issues from human health and well-being to equity, to power generation, to water quality. So the committee, having done these case studies, posed questions: why was one situation unsuccessful and the other successful? Is the federal government well organized to deal with the sustainability complexities? What are the key factors of success? And how would you do better going forward? I'm going to share with you five findings and six recommendations, and then we'll be finished. So finding one, these are committee slides. So sorry, bear with me. It's a lot of words on a lot of slides. Sustainability issues inherently involve multiple connections. No surprise there. Makes them very difficult to address on an individual basis. The federal government isn't well organized to deal with the complexity that sustainability management requires. That's a very, very interesting and important governance challenge. There are models of collaborative networks and shared governance that transcend organizational and resource boundaries. The Platte River system is one, the Columbia watershed is one, and there are others. So these are very useful models. Success depends on several key factors. Stakeholder engagement is very important, something we understand well in public health. Integrating multiple dimensions of a problem is absolutely necessary. Using a strong science base and processes that link science and decision making. And the science itself isn't just any old science. It has to be the complexity science, intrinsic and sustainability science. And reaching stakeholder agreement on the nature of important connections so that farmers understand the need for power generation and that white people understand the entitlements of the tribes and so on. The mutual understanding of different goals, very important. And sustainability management, when effectively implemented, creates greater value, minimizes unintended consequences, and ultimately improves efficiency and improves outcomes. So this is a good framework for decision making, albeit difficult to achieve within government. So the committee offered six recommendations. One is that it offered a decision framework, beginning with preparation and planning, moving through to design and implementation, evaluation and adaptation, and then outcomes. And this is an iterative system characteristic of a lot of decision-making processes where it's a learning system, adaptive management takes place, and there's constantly feedback loops built in. They're pictured here with only one line, but actually there are feedback loops iteratively throughout the process. Agencies should support innovations in efforts to address sustainability by identifying the barriers that exist, some of which I mentioned at the beginning of my time, and by developing ways to attack them. Agencies should legitimize and reward the activities of individuals who engage in initiatives that cross silos. We talked a lot about individuals in government whom we called moles, And mole was a positive term, not a pejorative term. These are people who burrow from their agency to another agency and create both personal relationships but also collaborative working relationships. Extremely important for the effective functioning of government, but they often have to work in clandestine ways. So we called them out. Agencies ought to reward that. Agencies should support long-term interdisciplinary research underpinning sustainability. This needs to be part of the agendas of government agencies that go beyond their formal mandates. They should support sustained cross-agency research on sustainability. And we called for a national sustainability policy. And this was big. Now, it might seem silly to do this at a time when the economy is crashing and there are lots of other things happening in the country, but thinking back to the formation of the National Academy of Sciences in the middle of the Civil War, you can actually do big forward-looking things even when times are tough. The objectives of the sustainability policy would be those shown here. Even without reading these, you can imagine that they are designed to get agencies to work together and to incorporate complexity thinking and sustainability science and management into agency function. There are some good models. The National Oceans Policy, the Incident Response Policy cuts across a number of silos in integrating emergency response, and the Desert Renewable Energy Conservation Plan. Not coincidentally, two out of three of these are place-based kinds of policies because the integrative power of place-based thinking is a very good model for sustainability management. So I want to finish by thanking you for coming and also thanking and acknowledging the National Academy of Sciences staff who staffed this committee's report. They were a terrific staff, and we should all be pleased, I think, here in a public health setting that more and more human health and well-being have been integrated into sustainability thinking. Even more broadly than that, we need, as public health professionals, I think, to engage this kind of science. It's different than traditional public health science, but offers great promise both for better governance and for better outcomes of the management of human natural systems. Thank you.